Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Tonight's half-hour segment will be with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. We'll do a recap on last week's show in case anyone has any additional information or would like to call in. At this time, I'd like to turn over the show to Dr. Jeanette Gallagher so that she can do a recap on last week's show.
Hi, Robert. This is Dr. Gallagher. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Fine. I would like to do this evening is not just jump into something new. How about we review what happened last week? So if there are pointers that everyone was not able to make at that time, they can go back to those and start doing some of these now.
Sounds good.
Okay, what I was talking about last week was the idea of about everybody, when something happens, any natural disaster, that just not to jump in and think you're going to have all of the tools to be able to keep yourself safe by stockpiling, having money, having ammunition, having a safe house and everything. All of those things are great, but when you lack those, or a few of those pieces of that puzzle are not put together, it tends to propagate a lot of fear. So your fear may tie you up and you may not be able to take care of yourself. So our number one thing we spoke about last week was about getting your head together. And I know that sounds so basic to everyone, like, yeah, I have my head together, I know what I'm doing. Well, shock affects everybody differently, and getting your head together can look so different to so many different people. What I would think of when I say get your head together is it's only items. They're only things. There are other things that you need to know is like when you get your head together, you think about your family, when you think about who is most important, what is most important. It's not most important that you worry about all of your computers and your television. Getting your head together would remember you need to know where your children are, where your family is, where your parents are, and how to be able to make sure everybody is safe. That would be get your head together. And then to get your family on the same page would be the second thing we spoke about. Getting your family on the same page is talking more about my children are at school and they're at college and something may happen there and they'll think it's no big deal and they'll just go on and not remember that they maybe should have important things with them like their cell phone and how to dial mom not on her cell phone or on the home phone and maybe know those phone numbers. Or if something does happen at mom's house, what should I be doing? Should I not be just going on vacation to France or whatever? Maybe I should pay attention. So letting other people know. And if you have elderly family members, you seriously need to remember about them because there really won't be that many people around to help them. The third thing we spoke about last week was have cash. Now, I know everybody says, oh, I have gold, I have silver, I have this, I have that. Cash means $200-$300. Doesn't mean thousands of dollars. It's enough to get you gas, to get from where you are to where you need to be, period, for cash. We talked about having a few supplies, what that might mean. Having a few supplies is not 10,000 bottles of water, jugs of water, in my garage in the dead heat of summer, and now every time I open them up, they smell and taste like plastic. That's not having a few supplies. Or I bought a whole tin of rice, bought 20 bags of rice last week at the grocery store, put them in my cupboard and pantry, and now when I ate them, they're full of weevils. So having a few supplies is secure cans. Take your rice, put it in a coffee can, put a top on it to make sure there's no weevils before you put it in there. All you need is one, and your whole batch is gone. For as far as water, definitely have water around. Have as many as you can put safely in a cool area. Definitely have some cans. You know, I looked at my pantry this week, and I was trying to turn it over from last few months. So I'm clearing everything out, and now I'm going to go this next 2 weeks and replace the cans and the boxes. Because if anything's been there for a while, I certainly don't need it to further spoil by heat. The fifth thing we spoke about was having shoes available. That sounds so absolutely benign that everybody just laughs at you like you're crazy. Oh, we all do it. It's a great thing. Whatever. It's not going to make any difference. If something happens right then and there in your home, you can turn around and be able to get on your shoes and go out. If you cannot get out of your house with flip-flops on, you will definitely hurt yourself. So you really want to have, we have a box. As soon as you come in our front door, everybody throws their shoes in there. Even if it's not the shoes they're wearing for the day, it's an old pair of sneakers, it's an old pair of work shoes. It's something that's just thrown in there, and at least everyone has one pair of closed-toed shoes in there. And that is so very important. And then we talked about having shoes in your car. Just throw an old pair of shoes from last year that you hate, that are flat, throw them in the trunk. And the sixth thing we talk about was don't procrastinate. And we had a whole lot of conversation about that, Robert, last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We sure did. We sure did have a lot of conversation in reference to that.
Because Robert, as many of us know here, is the biggest procrastinator. He will never have gas in his car ahead of time. We will go somewhere, and he will say, well, we better hurry up and find a gas station because I'm out of gas to get home. He never has gas ahead of time. It's always the last second. Or how much milk is there in the refrigerator? Well, there's enough for your coffee in the morning. Well, I guess that there's enough in there for my coffee in the morning, but is there anything else in there? And that's usually no. So we definitely live in an instantaneous time of life where people think that I can walk out, get what I want, when I want, doesn't matter. So definitely don't procrastinate. So maybe that's something everybody should try to work on, these few six items this week. They're very simple, but they definitely can help a lot in the huge crisis. Anything that might happen, right then and there, you would know that you did something. Some people will say, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not worried about it. Everybody will take care of me. Everybody that needs to be taken care of are the ones that have medical conditions or in more serious situations. You need to be able to take care of yourself with the little things if you can. Do these six things. You should definitely have a better foot forward.
So basically what you're saying is to be self-sufficient as best as possible.
Self-sufficient in minor things that would cause you fear and concern. Where's my family? I don't have any money in my pocket. You know, I can turn around right now and get a glass of water if I needed it. Put on my shoes so I can walk where I need to and just start thinking ahead of time, you know. How silly was it that I had six cars in the driveway and not one of them has more than a half a tank of gas. Or a quarter tank of gas, which is usually the case in our house.
Interesting, interesting. So that's actually a good recap from last week. Let's talk about what happens just immediately after a disaster, and should you leave your home or should you stay?
When there are storms that you have time to prepare to leave, similar to hurricanes, then probably if they tell you to go, you need to go, period. Second, if it's a tornado and they're saying that there's a lot of outbreaks coming, definitely you need to prepare. And if you're in a dead center area and you have no means of preparing, you should be finding someone to help you to get you out of that area or help keep you safe. But if there are instances like earthquakes where there is no preparation time, what do you do? So those are times when we always talk about, what do you do? Do you leave? Do you stay? Do you go? every single situation is so totally different. There are so many variables in it that you just need to start to play them around in your head. Have a game with your family. Well, if this happened, what do you think we should do? And your children will usually come up with the most out-of-the-box ideas. They will come up with things that are so, that sounds so cool, I never thought of that kind of ideas. So you really should listen to your children. And if there are other ideas, say, why would that work? Why would that not work? Because what you were thinking might not be what other people are thinking. I might say to my husband, I want you to go get gas. He's going to go get gas, and he's going to put $10 in. I told him to go get gas. I thought he was filling the tank. Two totally different perspectives on the same phrase of words. So what happens when you have a chance to think about leaving? When you think about leaving, just take what's important. Let your head, get your head all together. Have everybody together say, it'll be okay. This is what we're going to do. And then time to move. Move on. Move to the next place. Move to the next area of safety. And then if it's something that happens pretty quickly, what do you do? I think that's where we'll focus today, Robert, more about if something happens and you are in that area, similar to tornadoes, similar to earthquakes, okay, possibly like if this storm. So if let's say a storm happens right now and I'm standing here. I've had minimal preparation. Let's pray I did those top six. And so did my family members, wherever they were. So the first thing you really have to do is decide about damage. Is your house totally damaged? Is the house next to you damaged? Is your entire block? Is your entire city? Is your entire region? That is very, very important, because if you have just your house or just several homes, there are still places you can go to find safety and services. And if you have a whole town or a whole region, you need to go wait, usually double the amount of the amount, let's say if it's 10 miles of damage, you know, let's make it maybe 20 miles of the city is damaged. You need to go double that to get out. So 20 and 20 is 40. So you really want to be 40 miles out, because that's usually where you'll start finding services. Biggest reason is if one person doesn't have electricity, the other doesn't, and then the other doesn't. So what type of public utilities are actually there? If the transformer in the main part of town is out, well, certainly don't think that that transformer is going to pop up in the next 24 hours and everything's going to be hunky-dory. So they will let you know what you need to do at that time. Is it time to go to the next area, other people's homes? Or if you're still under more of a danger risk of another storm or earth event, probably time to move, pick up your stuff, get in your car, and travel out. A lot of people really don't want to leave, and, you know, we always talk about that, Robert, don't we, about people wanting to leave. I know here in New Orleans, and I know here in New Orleans, a lot of people really love to stay. They're holding down, they're hunkering down, I'm going to stay, I never died before, why should I die now? But, you know, life changes, we depend on different things. People who used to be around supporting us aren't there anymore. Just whole different situations have changed so much. Is there anything you thought about on that topic?
Well, what you had interjected on was leaving, when to leave. I think it's important for everybody to really realize that, like you said, if you live in an area with hurricanes, like we do here, and they tell you to leave, you need to leave. You certainly don't need to stay. There's ample time to get people to get you out, get you to safety, help you. There's no reason for anyone to stay, absolutely no reason for anyone to stay. And it amazes me that people want to stay even though it's a mandatory evacuation and they want to have hurricane parties and everything else. My thought process on that, what they're doing is the disregard of the first responders who'll be responsible for coming to you since you decided to have a hurricane party. So I think it's important that everybody pay attention to what you're saying, and if they're told to leave, they need to leave. Which then brings up another topic. Once you've left and you've gone to that 40-mile distance or whatever distance you travel to that you and your family have deemed a place of safety, what to do and how to go about doing as far as getting back in. When is it a good time to get back in? How do you get back in? How do you prepare to get back in? So how would you suggest people handle that?
Well, I think it's very important to remember who's in charge after a storm. Cities and locations that have had storms before have better plans on how to get you back in. Cities like Homestead, Florida, Miami, Florida, and here in New Orleans, those are just right off the top of my head. They know how to get you back in now. I can tell you probably before Katrina, no, they were not good at getting you back in, because getting back in after Katrina was a smorgasbord of Lord knows who's going to get in, who's not. No one had the papers to be able to get in or not get in, and there was a whole lot of mishmash on who actually came into the area. There were no priorities, who was set, who should be, who shouldn't. I do know that the government has put out new parameters for disasters on what will take place after a disaster, and it was very interesting to read because they work like molasses. Well, we're going to go in and evaluate, then we're going to decide, then we're going to look at this, then we're going to look at that. When holy smokes, you just want to get back in, and that blah, blah, blah molasses stuff in there, their protocol lines could take days, and you'll be sitting there. And definitely there will be people at the perimeters of certain areas that are destroyed that should get in and there are people that shouldn't, and there will be people there who know what they are supposed to do, and there will be people there who don't know. So what do? You're going to have all kinds of other reasons what to get in and what not to let in. Best thing to remember is if you're someone who has a small business or an important business after disaster, similar to I'm an electric worker, I can go up and put up wires. I'm a water person, I can go clean out drains. I'm a doctor, I can go help. I'm a nurse, I can go help. Talk about trying to get in if you're a chiropractor, I don't think so. Not always happening. Not on that first level. Definitely the second, but not the first. I'm the baker down the street and I'll go make bread. Probably not. Probably someone who says, I'm a grocery store and I need to clean it out so I can get more supplies in. You see the difference? So how do you get back in? Most important thing about getting back in is, again, going back to the top six, get your head together, is don't procrastinate, is also to know, we can add a seventh, is know who you are and have papers to verify it. I'm a school teacher, here's my paycheck stub. I'm a doctor, here's my license. I'm a grocery store worker, here's my last paycheck. I own that grocery store, here's my name on the license. Or I work as a pharmacist, and here's where I work. One piece of paper. You can also get that online a lot of times. After a big disaster, places like CVS. You could have gone online, called CVS, and said, I need a paper to verify so I can get back into the store. They email it, they fax it to wherever you are, if they can verify you, and that's how you get back in. And do you really want to always be getting back in? So if we can hold for a minute, we have a caller, okay, and maybe we could share a little more on this. Oops, caller, we just lost the caller. Okay.
Well, we'll try again.
Okay, so what we're talking about also is when you go back in, you know, do you really want to? You know, we have about 8 more minutes left. So let's talk about when you go back in. You know, it's really important to know that if you don't have electricity in a small section of the area, that's no big deal. When you don't have electricity in an entire city, that's a huge deal. And you really don't want to be bringing children, animals, pets, elderly, people that have health issues. You simply do not, under any circumstances, want these people to be coming back in, because there will be no one to help them. And when you don't have electricity, you think, oh, it's no big deal, it's not hot here, who cares? Well, sewers work on electricity, the pumps, to keep them clean. Water uses electricity to be able to get from the water company to you. You have electricity that runs your gas station. You have electricity that would run your lights, your street lights. So there are so many safety regulations, and there are so many things put in place to keep you safe, that when those start to crumble, you seriously need to think about going back there or not. And as far as staying is definitely an issue, because when you start staying and you don't have parameters around you, and what that means is somebody that's looking out for you, anybody and anything, could be walking in the dark. And if you sit there and you say, oh, got my candles, no big deal, I can stay. Did you know that all of those, if you don't have a barrier around the city, all those people that may want to get back in for crimes of opportunity, they can get back in and be lurking in the dark, and you sitting there with your nice little candles on just told them you're home. So what does that say? I got something that you want. You want my food, you want my ammunition, you want my candles, you may want my money, whatever it is, I'm here, you can come and get me. So pretty much when you're sitting there, you look more as an opportunity versus other people who may have already left. Granted, they break into homes, but they love to have that little give and take, you know, hey, I'm going to come and get you, let me find out where you are. They love that. So that's generally a crime of opportunity there.
I guess then, should people really return?
I think if an entire city, let's pick a city just for an ideal, try to say, if something hits Chicago, you need to be moving. You need to go to Pennsylvania, you need to go to Ohio, you need to go somewhere else. Because by the time they get your area back, all of that stuff and toxins and all that crap is in the ground, the dirt, the air, and everything. And do you really think that they're going to have your sewers and your water back up and your main lines within a time frame that you can actually think that that would be important? I don't think so. The way we think things should happen is not the way things will happen, because money will definitely be driving all of these projects. So if it's just a smaller area, you can be in there and you can help and help other people. Big city, you need to be finding somewhere else to live. And possibly even so, I understand, you know, with Joplin, they're doing a lot of rebuilding and everything, but there's got to be coming a time. There are a lot of abandoned cities in this world. And, you know, to sit down and take a city that's been totally destroyed and all of its infrastructure and say, hey, you know that city next to us? I know it's abandoned, but it already has structures. Why don't we go in there and turn around and use that? Because you know what? Those structures where you are coming from that got all broken down, they all need to be remediated. And what remediated would mean is all of the bad stuff needs to come out. You need to start all over again. You know? So if you've got a building that's half falling down, you have to pull out all of the bad wires. You got to pull out all the bad parts. And there's way too much to be pulled out. So if you're pulling everything out, why not turn around and go to the next city where there's some buildings and structures that have been in place, and then you can just build up from there. That's my thought. That's my thought for the day. Maybe I don't want to be doing another city. Maybe I want to be moving to the next.
Interesting. So how... how would people handle that? How would, if let's just say if they wanted to do that, can they do that? Is it feasible? Who would make those decisions?
I think that with all of the people who are becoming more outspoken, starting to learn survival tactics, starting to learn what really takes and what they would really like to see in their city, what type of people would support them. I think if you start a very small area, you'll start to generate other people to come into your area. More or less like, let's take our little wagon train to the West Coast and we'll stop along the way and pitch a tent. I think there'll be a whole lot more of that going on. There's a lot of people now who are just going out to the wilderness and starting those cities. We just don't hear about them all the time. But you'll sure start hearing about them when the one next to them is in ruins and they want to have some other people come in. And, you know, just starting to learn, you know, hey, do I really want to be living around this anymore? I can tell you, I live in New Orleans. I definitely think possibly, and everybody will have a different opinion, yeah, maybe I wish I stayed in Texas or maybe I wish I didn't come back. You know, I don't find certain things that I really may want to see that look fabulous or certain things that are a great thing or a change. I'm not finding what I'm looking for. I'm finding more of the not-so-good things that I'm not wanting to have around me. So I guess it's just your perspective on where you are. And I understand we all draw to us and create those things, you know, that will challenge us. But crime, poverty, insufficient systems in the government, that's probably not, I don't think I'm drawing that to me. I just would like to not move away from that.
I can agree with you in reference to that. Was that caller back online? Did we happen to get that person back? No, we lost that person. So I guess we'll just have to move on. We have about 2 minutes left. How about giving a brief synopsis of what's going to take place on next week's call?
Next week's call, I think we're going to change it up a little bit. Next week, we're possibly going to start talking about, I'm sick, what do I do? And that would be in reference to natural disasters. So what do you do ahead of time? What do you not do? You know, I mean, for instance, an acquaintance of ours uses a CPAP machine. Okay, my electric goes out. Guess what? I won't be using that machine. Does that mean he's going to go to work and he's going to drive down the highway without the machine? I don't think so. So there's different little variables you need to look at. And do you really want to be stocking up on, you know, hand sanitizers and all this other junk? So we'll be talking about I'm sick. You know, how does my health care fit in with that in the face of a natural disaster?
Sounds good. Then we look forward to next week's show. With that having been said, we'd like to say thank you to those who joined in and listened to us but didn't get a chance to call in. Please tune in to us next week. We'll be at the same time on Blog Talk Radio.